Hey guys, and welcome to the show. A few months ago, we did a show on ransomware, and it's become kind of a pervasive issue. So we're going to do a follow-up to that with Jessica Payne today. Sorry I can't be more witty, but this is a serious subject, so play the music. Hey guys, and welcome to the show. This is kind of an episode on demand. I was minding my own business doing email, and I got an email from Jessica saying, hey, this ransomware stuff is getting kind of out of hand. Can you ping me back and let me know if we can do another Taste of Premiere on ransomware? And so, of course, it's Jessica. I said, absolutely, because Jessica's been awesome. So without further ado, we're back. We're going to do another ransomware episode, and Jessica's with me. Jessica, you there?
Hello. So yeah, I pinged you because this is kind of an on the rise sort of thing, because we want to talk about both the ransomware, like we talked about before, but I want to talk about targeted attacks against networks too, because it's not just the commodity ransomware, the thing we talked about in the last episode, which still remains a big deal, and I think we want to talk about it again, because there are entire businesses having major compromises from it. But there's also the concept of a targeted attacker who wants to either destroy or exploit you on your network. And one of the ways they can do that is by deploying ransomware as their tool for doing that. So it's sort of a thing where I want to talk about two different forks, two different trains of thought, and two different defensive technologies that you can use there. But the good news is there are defenses that you can use against this.
That sounds awesome. So this is not the, hey, I've encrypted your hard drive on your local machine. We're going to delete all your data unless you buy the key from us. This is a different type of threat.
Well, there's a little bit of that, too, because I think that you'll have seen some news stories recently about this, where entire businesses have been encrypted and sort of held for ransom. And there's a targeted way to do it, so that what they're doing is they're doing the exact same thing that if you remember the slam video or any of the things we've talked about with lateral movement. They're getting into the network. They're getting those elevated credentials. And instead of doing something where they're stealthily hanging out on the network, maybe stealing intellectual property, maybe just hanging out with you for a while, they're like, okay, I have domain admin level access. I have decided that with that domain admin level access, I'm going to take ransomware as a service or something like that and deploy it to the whole network. So instead of using the domain admin level access to sneakily stay on your network for a very long time, maybe watch transactions, maybe make a slow profit, they've decided to either destroy the network or to take advantage of the fact that they can hold you ransom and get that payment. And that's a very different attacker mindset than what I think we've been dealing with for a very long time. Because a lot of our security and incident response sort of methodologies that are based around advanced attackers, it's this concept that it's a very much a slow burn. They're going to get into your network. They're going to move about laterally. They're going to do a lot of investigation. They're going to hang out. They want to be your friend. They want to avoid detection. They want, not really your friend, but they want to be there for 18 or 24 months, that 200-day thing, and they're going to slowly move about your network, avoid detection. This is something very different. This is where I've come in, I've done the playbook, I've gotten to domain admin, and then I let you know I'm there. I'm going to say, I'm here, give me money. Or I'm here, and I don't like what you're doing, so I'm going to go ahead and take down your network type of thing. So it's a very different set of methodologies, and I think that it's important to sort of talk about that, because a lot of our defense, a lot of our incident response is based around an idea that the attacker doesn't want to be detected. And this is an attacker who very quickly is going to be detected.
So it's an attacker that deploys his tools, gets things ready, and then kind of says, hey, pay me or I'm going to hit the self-destruct button.
Exactly. So, and it's a destructive button that can be based on that same sort of commodity ransomware payload that we've been talking about. So you might get that exact same pop-up. You might get the pop-up that says, I've encrypted your files, or you know, that sort of announcement that it's there. But it's very much meant to be aimed at an entire enterprise and to take down the enterprise. And the bad news is that a lot of enterprises are susceptible to this sort of attack. And when we think about all of those critical controls we've been talking about for years, layers. Let's randomize local administrator passwords. Let's make domain admin access very hard to get. Let's secure against the lateral movement. Let's segment our networks. Let's make sure that two workstations can't talk to each other, or, you know, make sure that critical file shares are isolated in some way. All of those things that are related to every single security control we've been talking about are the same bread and butter sort of security controls that will help you out in this situation with that targeted sort of attack. And that's the good news about this, is if we make it so that they can't get to that high-level access right away and deploy the payload of their choice, it becomes a lot different story. It's not somebody who has carte blanche to take down your whole network. They have to work a lot harder at it. Or they have to do something like what the commodity one would do. And with the commodity ransomware, the other stuff that's affecting networks, it's not so much stealing the credentials and elevating to domain admin and spreading it about there. What it's doing is it's actively looking at your file shares, because that's the scary part about the non-targeted version of the ransomware, is it's you acting as yourself against your own files. And when we think about an enterprise that might have something like a giant document repository, if we think about a lot of law firms or legal places, there's big old document repositories. That's what they do. And if somebody who maybe has document reviewer access gets a piece of ransomware, that's not targeted. It will encrypt every one of those files, and then they're going to have to think of a strategy for there. And that's one of those places where these two things matter, is because the story with ransomware right now is not particularly heartwarming, for lack of a better term. I'm going to be honest with everybody. You know, there's not a lot of ways to detect it, and there's not a lot of ways to stop that acting as you on the network against your own files type of thing. So while we're doing all those critical controls, while we're segmenting our networks, while we're thinking about, you know, password hygiene and all that stuff to keep them from getting domain admin, one of the most important things you should be thinking about right now is your backup strategy. And your backup strategy, if you want to avoid something like a ransomware that can delete your backups, needs to include offline backup strategies. This is something that's very critical, because if we're thinking about, I'm backing up to, you know, I'm syncing my files to somewhere, or I've got volume shadow copy, if I've got a piece of ransomware, it has access to do all the APIs you could do. So if I could send a command as myself to delete volume shadow copies, or to delete older versions of this in my synced up OneDrive even, or something like that, the ransomware is going to do that, because if you have backups, they know they're not going to pay. So offline backups become a very key part of this strategy if we want to have critical data that we know isn't going to be taken away from us, because that's a very important thing to think about. The ransomware is, they have been uncred encrypting your files, and, you know, you pay them their Bitcoin and everything else like that. But if I want to deploy a payload and stop your network from working, if there's maybe some ideological reason that I don't like your company, or if I'm just a jerk, I can do that by just not encrypting your files. And that's a very easy piece of malware to get. And a really famous variety of this targeted ransomware that we're talking about is actually the Samus threat. And we did a really good blog post at the MMPC about this, where we talk about how attackers got into the network through a network vulnerability, a third-party device that's on the network. They elevate to domain admin. They use PSExec. They move about the network. That same playbook that you see in the SLAM talk that we did, or talk about lateral account movement. But then they chose to deploy a payload of ransomware. And when we think about them deploying the ransomware, this is a very quick profit for them. This is something where they can come into the network, be targeted, you know, get into the network, but they can make a quick buck. But it's important to remember that they could just as easily have at that point deployed a script that said format C. So if I've got the ability and a well-publicized methodology for attackers to get into your network and get absolutely anything they want, it's a very scary place to be, because it's not just ransomware. This is ransomware. Yes, you could pay your ransom, but if we think about like a $30,000 ransom, that could be crippling to many companies. But they've also been in your network. They've been in your network as domain admins. What if they want to do something like publicize all the information that you have there, which they could do. If we've got a well-published methodology, if we've got the ability for people on the internet to learn how this worked, if I'm someone that has a lot of really good data, there's a good chance that someone wants your data. And if I haven't taken those critical controls that would stop the Samus actor or that lateral movement, I'm going to have people who want to take my data, put it on the internet, or people who don't like my company. And that's the part that's very scary, is because if I have the ability for an attacker to get into my network, elevate to domain admin, move about the network, and deploy a payload like, in this instance, Samus ransomware. It's not just about how many Bitcoin or how much money I have to pay that for. It's about what they're going to deploy or what they're going to take from your network. So this is where things start to get really scary, is because if we have a set of targeted attackers that are going about deploying ransomware, there's going to be a follow-on effort. There's going to be follow-on people who are inspired by that. That's just the way this always works. And if you haven't thought about your controls, if you haven't sat down as an IT organization and thought about how would I stop Samus, how would I stop that lateral account movement, how would I stop them from being able to deploy that payload that they could deploy could be absolutely anything. They could deploy any program they wanted at that point in time, whether that be that format C, or as they're moving about their network, they could have gotten all of your data and then said, I'm going to publish your data unless you pay me money. And that's a very scary place to be, I think. And I think that we need to talk more about how IT organizations should be aware of this threat, feel a sense of urgency, and take care to do the things we've talked about all this time, all of these critical controls on their network.
Absolutely. So what can customers do to safeguard themselves?
I think that this is a great thing, because we have a lot of really well-published advice for dealing with something like that targeted attacker that's doing lateral account movement. We've got the local administrator password solution. We've got the pass the hash white papers. We've got the privilege admin workstations. So if we're thinking about an attacker who gets into your network, elevates the privileges, and moves laterally, a targeted attacker, there's a really good set of playbooks that we have as Microsoft, and those are available on the internet for customers to get. So when we think about it, we've got randomize your local administrator passwords. Make sure that somebody can't use that local account to move about the network. Grab the pass the hash white papers from Microsoft.com/PTH, because that's where we talk about using firewalls, group policies, things like that to prevent those attackers from moving about the network. Think about deploying host-based firewalls. That's a big part of this, is because when we talk about network segmentation, a lot of IT decision makers, that's a very scary set of words to hear, because network segmentation to you means I have to go out and buy a whole bunch of new layer 2 switches. That's not what we're talking about here. If we want to stop an attacker from moving about the network laterally, very easy way to do that is to deploy host-based firewalls so that we can ensure that for high-value traffic, I'm accessing it only from certain places. And that's something that's deployed via group policy inside of Windows, which is really easy because most IT organizations have at least one group policy. So talking about preventing local accounts being used across the network, those things that we've talked about, that's how you can prevent this sort of bread and butter lateral account movement from happening, getting to domain admin, deploying that. Take a look at your group policies. We've talked about it a lot every time I've been on your show. Group policy is a great way to deploy software, which can include malware. If you have a bunch of help desk or frontline support people in your group policy creator owners or in the groups that can create and edit group policies, that's a one-stop phishing email away from total ability to deploy software in your environment. So look at AGPM, look at advanced group policy management, look at the versioning on it, look at change control behind it, and look at who actually has the permissions to edit group policy in your environment. Because that can be a surprising number of people, people that have the full control ability to link group policy places. Take a look also at who can manipulate those sort of group policies after they're created, because if we've got maybe somebody's linked to group policy, what if it's got a script that's held somewhere? If I can do a very quick GP result in your environment, I can see what groups you're in, I can see what shares you have access to, I can see that maybe there's a batch file that's in this group policy, and maybe I can edit that batch file. So take a look inside of your group policies, take a look at the executable code that you have stored out there, and make sure that that can't be used with bad permissions to spread malware throughout your environment or just take over your environment. So these are well-documented things that we have out there about how to stop that. And we want to get to a least privilege environment as well. So if you've got a lot of service accounts and domain admins, that's a lot of easy credential theft. Think about it. If I'm running something like a SQL server, I don't want to be running that with a widespread set of account privileges. I want to make sure the people who access that are doing it in a secure manner. And that's where the privilege admin workstations get to. So this is more about that targeted attack. This is about, stopping that lateral account movement, but it's so important to talk about. We've talked about it a lot, but now that we're starting to see it not just be an advanced persistent threat, determined human adversary getting into the network. and doing now they're doing things to kind of disrupt business operations and manipulate and blackmail. This is a little bit scarier because this is a real and present threat and a real and present danger that people have probably seen news stories about, but there's a lot of really good mitigations you can already be putting in place to stop that. And then when we think about how did they initially get into the network, things like that, and a lot of times it might be a third-party device, it might be a vendor device, it might be a vulnerability. There will always be an inroad into your network. Attackers are called determined human adversaries for a reason. They want to get into your network, and they're going to spend a lot of resources and time getting in there. It's no software vendor's fault, nothing like that. So just assume breach is really about, I'm going to spend all my time trying to get into Contoso because Contoso holds credit card data. So once I get into Contoso, that's where the lateral movement preventions matter so much, making sure you have that network segmentation, credential hygiene, and making sure then you can figure out what's happened after they pop that first box. But there are some good stories about preventing them from getting into the network in the first place. And this is really where we start to tie it back into that commodity ransomware. So if we think about the ransomware that isn't targeted. It's not somebody getting into the network, moving about with domain admin. They're getting in, they're encrypting their files as you. So if you've got something like a big old SAN that's got a petabyte of data and it's got authenticated users can read the data, guess what? I can encrypt all of that. I can take down your business operations without ever getting admin access. And that's a very scary place to be because if we have maybe an intern. I hate to blame the intern, but maybe somebody who hasn't had the traditional IT training of what to do and what not to do. They get an email. It says, enable macros in order to view this content. That sort of very basic way that people get into networks. They click on enable macros because they think it's a receipt, something they have to do. And what they've done is by clicking on that enable macros button, they've essentially executed a command prompt for the attacker. So someone with absolutely no administrative access in the environment, someone who's just a regular old person, if you've got a bunch of file shares that they can crawl out to, they can encrypt and take down that whole data. So I want people to think about macros in Microsoft Office. There's a bunch of group policies that you can use to disable those. You have to think about how you're going to do it because you can affect business operations if you have a lot of macros. So we've got a blog post about a type of ransomware called Locky, which was spreading exclusively almost through macros, about how you can either just outright disable macros because you don't need them, or you can create trusted locations. So if your business has macros, you can run them in a safe place, things like that. So think about the macro distribution level. Think about how just being able to socially engineer someone into clicking a button could be enough to take down a large part of your company. And then think about that drive-by attack that you might get. A lot of times what people get is they're visiting just a legitimate web page, and there's been an embedded exploit kit in that web page. And that exploit kit will either take advantage of a vulnerability on the system, and it will go ahead and it will start to execute that code on the behalf of the user. So a lot of times that will happen because of an out-of-date third-party plugin. And there's some good news for this, is you could stop this because we actually have a group policy that says prevent execution of out-of-date ActiveX on the internet. This is a group policy. It's been there since, I think, two summers ago, where if you enable this group policy, if you've got out-of-date flash, once you're on the internet zone, it won't execute those flash objects. So if we've got, you know, out-of-date flash, something that would be happening in that exploit kit, we can stop those things there. So there are mitigations that can prevent this from happening, prevent those initial inroads in your environment. And this is just the same old advice we've been talking about for years now, but I really want people to pay attention to it.
Yeah, that's really good because I think a lot of customers think, oh, this will never happen to me, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the mindset. One of my customers just had it happen to them. They didn't lose everything, but they certainly lost everything on one machine. They had somebody that got an email message, they clicked the link, they got encrypted, and that was the end of the story. Mm-hmm. We ended up, as a result of that, pushing out the registry key that you just talked about, the ActiveX registry key, you know, to hopefully try and keep everybody a little bit safer. But you're right, it's out there, and people don't realize it's out there, and it's amazing to me that these guys, well, it's not really surprising, but it is disconcerting that these guys have gotten so brazen as to essentially deploy the toolkit, knock on your door and say, hey, by the way, we're holding a gun to your head. You know?
Well, I mean, it's copycat criminals. I mean, you see it in real real world crime, although this is real world crime. But, you know, the more we talk about it, the more somebody is going to start to realize, hey, I can make money off this too. And it's definitely something that I want customers to think about. I want us to get to that assume breach mindset. If your users are the DMZ, if your user has the rights to click on enable macros, guess what? They're your new DMZ. They're the people who are going to be making that choice for you about whether or not to let the attacker in. So we need to assume breach. We need to assume that we're going to have user-based DMZs and start to plan to protect those networks.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording this episode, and one of the things that you had mentioned was that there was an attack where somebody went in and actually deleted the online backups before they, you know, kind of pulled the gun out and said, hey, pay me. So that's pretty scary too, right?
Yeah, and I mean, if this is your business, right, your business is encrypting people's devices and then charging them money to decrypt them, of course you're going to think about backups. And there's a lot of samples that we've seen that do take care of backups, so that would be volume shadow copies, which are APIs that are readily available even on some network storage devices, some fancy enterprise-grade network storage devices. You can delete your own volume shadow copies. So we want to think about that. We want to think about online services. If I've got the ability to delete the synced snapshots to my cloud backup service, of course the attacker is going to do that to make sure that you pay them. So you really have to think about offline backups. You have to think about defense in depth, and you have to think about what will happen if this does happen to me. And it's a really, if you want to get an entry-level way into sort of tabletop exercises, red team, blue team type of activities in your environment, let's think about ransomware. Get your network defenders. Let's get your sysadmins, your desktop engineers, those people in a room. Get your security team in a room, the monitoring people, get them in a room, and just start to think, okay, if I had somebody on the help desk click enable macros, what would happen? Run through that exercise. Think what would happen on your network, because you're going to be able to have a very effective thought process about either those targeted attackers or the commodity attackers. What would they be able to get to? And it's a very sad story in most environments, as we talked about a lot in incident response. I'm going to get a targeted attacker where the whole thing happened, total domain compromise from one end user clicking on enable macros. So have the thought process. Think about what would happen and think about how your network would stand up to a user running code like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that we've done episodes on this before. You and I have talked about ransomware before. We've talked about LAPS. We did an episode on Pass the Hash. Mm-hmm. If you're watching this and you haven't seen any of those episodes, you know, please go back, you know, watch those episodes so that you understand kind of how to protect yourself against some of this stuff. You know, that's our main concern here, is we want you to be safe and protected, because let's face it, if you get a black eye because of this, so do we, because you're running our stuff. So it makes everybody look bad.
Exactly. And I mean, It's old hat maybe, because we've already talked about all the defenses, but your C-levels in your organization, they're going to be seeing this on the news and they're going to wonder about it. And the attackers are going to see it on the news and they're going to try to do it against you too. So this is more of a alert system than anything new. This is going to be more go to look at all the stuff we have, know this is a real and present danger, and that there are ways that you can be helping yourself right now.
Okay, so I don't want to put you on the spot at all, but if you had a list of top five things that you can do to protect yourself, you know, what would those five things be?
Yeah, and I think this is cool, because this is a conversation we were actually having inside of Microsoft Cybersecurity right before we started this call, is what would we say that those top five controls are? And I think that it's important to remember that there's a difference between that commodity ransomware and the targeted one and the targeted attack in general. But there are things that you should be doing on your network regardless of what the threat profile is. You have to randomize local administrator passwords. You have to do credential hygiene. You have to make sure that domain admin credentials are not exposed on lower level workstations, and that those domain admins are doing secure administration. And you have to take that to the next level so that it's high-value asset protection as well. There's more important things in life than just domain admin credentials. If every piece of your data lives in the SQL server and your SQL server administrators are, you know, web browsing from the server that they do, that's really bad, right? So think about secure administrative practices. Get to network segmentation. Think about the fact that all of your workstations should not be talking to each other. Do this as a host firewall level. Much easier there. Think about printers, devices, or in the case of vendor-based devices that might be on your network. Let's let's say that you have some sort of web device, it might have a vulnerability in it. Let's make sure it's isolated and that I don't have a bunch of availability for domain admin level service accounts to log into it and I can't get straight into your network. Think about, you know, what would I do to prevent the exploit in the first place? Because exploit prevention, stopping the code from executing that gets the person into the network, because that foothold, that assume breach, right? We want to assume that there will be code executed. I want you to build your networks with the understanding that a bad guy may get you to execute a piece of code and then may implant into Outlook as their way of persistence, because that's absolutely something that you could do. You could create an entirely Outlook-based persistence mechanism. You know, so assume there's going to be code there. Build defense in depth. Make sure they can only get that one machine, and that once they start to move out of it, you're going to start to notice those patterns. But there are some things you can do to prevent that code from executing, especially when we talk about the commodity ransomware. Think about your browser. Think about that block out-of-X controls on out-of-date ActiveX on the internet. Think about macros. Think about preventing that from happening. Think about email hygiene in general. Whether you've got Office 365, ATP, or if you've got some other device on there, deep scrub into your environment and make sure that you're inspecting your emails for portable executables, for executable code, for JavaScript, things like that. Stop JavaScripts from automatically executing when someone double clicks on it. These sort of things that you can do. Think about how to stop the code that's coming in. And quite frankly, if you're the network defender, if you're the group policy admin, you are probably the strongest line of defense on your network, so congratulations. Most people don't think of the desktop engineers as the strongest line of defense, but if you're a desktop engineer and you have no idea what is coming into your network, go sit with the Exchange guy, go sit with the monitoring team, go sit with the network team and kind of build these non-siloed IT security defenses and go through that exercise that I talked about. That's the things I would recommend you do.
Sorry, I muted my mic so I could cough.
I thought you were yawning. I thought it was pretty boring there.
No, I'm coughing. I'm getting over a cold, so it's embarrassing, but there it is. I cough just like everybody on the planet. All right, well, that's awesome, and thank you for that list. And Jessica, I want to thank you again for coming back. You know, we love having you on the show, and this is awesome. And ransomware is certainly a scary topic for everyone, or should be a scary topic. If you're listening to this and you're not at least concerned about this, then, you know, I suggest you do more research, because it is a real threat out there and it's something that really everybody should care about.
Absolutely. I mean, if you haven't heard about it, go research it. We're going to put some links up here. We're going to put links to all the things that I talked about on how to fix it. Because, again, this is just a public service announcement, rehash of things we've already talked about. Want to raise your alert on it. So please do the research. Please learn about it. Get a little bit more information on it. And, you know, we're here for you.
Yeah, and let's be clear. It's not really a rehash, right? Because we haven't talked about the global threat, right? The global environment threat. We've talked about ransomware on a single machine because somebody clicked a link.
Yeah.
But to me, I think this goes a lot further. And so I think it's actually a lot scarier and a lot more important.
It is. It's very scary. It's very important. And that's the reason that I called you on a Sunday night and said I wanted to do an episode.
Yep, absolutely. And so there you have it, guys. Without further ado, thanks again, Jessica. And that's your Taste of Premiere.